Hello and welcome to the Veterinary Secrets Podcast. My name is Dr. Andrew Jones and this is episode 7. In today's podcast, I'm going to talk to you about cancer, the 7 cancer warning signs, and what you can do to prevent cancer in your dogs and cats. Talk to you about what you can do for an anxious pet and why you should be worried about this. And then answer a listener's question. Is it safe to let my dog lick me? My friend said it isn't. Now Veterinary Secrets is on iTunes. You can go to iTunes.com, download iTunes, and under the podcast section, search for Veterinary Secrets. We're also on Stitcher. You can download the Stitcher app and search for Veterinary Secrets or go to stitcher.com/podcast/veterinary-secrets. I would sure appreciate it if you would subscribe to my podcast and leave a review. You can do so on iTunes or in Stitcher. Questions or comments, feel free to post a comment on my blog at veterinarysecrets.com/blog or send me an email, podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. Thanks, let's get right into today's podcast. First, let's start out with pet cancer and the 7 pet cancer warning signs. Cancer is now the number one cause of death in our pets today. The National Cancer Institute has published figures saying that more than 27 million dogs in the U.S. will be diagnosed with cancer each year. Of dogs over the age of 10, over 50% will now die of cancer, an estimated 14 million. Golden Retrievers have the highest incidence of cancer amongst all dog breeds. The breed's average lifespan is now down to 10.5 years, and 60% of Golden Retrievers will die of cancer. Breeds at increased risk include Golden Retrievers, Boxers, Rottweilers, Bernese Mountain Dogs, Boston Terriers, Irish Setters, Cocker Spaniels, and English Bulldogs. So what is cancer? The definition of cancer is abnormal cells which divide without control and are able to invade other tissues. Cancer cells can spread to other parts of the body through the blood and lymphatic system. Cells normally grow and divide in a controlled way to produce more cells as they are needed to keep the body healthy. When cells become old and are damaged, they die and are replaced with new cells. However, sometimes this process goes wrong. There are mutations in which these cells do not die when they should, and new cells form when the body does not need them. These extra cells may form a massive tissue called a cancer or tumor. There are more than 100 different types of cancer, and the cancers are named for either the organ they affect or the type of cell which they start in. So let's start out with cancer warning signs. Then I'm going to go into more detail about cancer itself and what you can do to prevent cancer. Probably 7 important warning signs. There are a whole number of ones, but these are the 7 most important ones I think that you should be aware of. And if you see them, they warrant a closer exam and a veterinary visit. First, lumps or masses. Most lumps or masses, fortunately, are non-cancerous, such as the common dog benign fatty growths or lipomas. Early warning signs for ones you should be concerned about are lumps and bumps which are fast growing. They palpate very firm, so if you're feeling them just under the skin, they're very firm as opposed to being soft and almost feeling fatty. Typically, then they're solidly attached. They're firmly attached under the skin and they're not easily movable. So if they're very firm, fast growing, that warrants likely a more serious type of growth. Have that examined. Weight loss. Anytime there's sudden, unexplained weight loss in a dog or cat, you know, in practice, I was always concerned about cancer. It can speed up your pet's metabolism, producing the rapid weight loss. Common medical causes include diabetes, hyperthyroid disease, and cats. Regularly monitor your pet's weight, and if weight loss occurs, have a veterinarian examine blood work. Lethargy, low energy. If your dog or cat has cancer, they may be anemic, giving them less energy. My own dog, Hoochie, he died of spleen cancer, hemangiosarcoma. First sign that he was him not having the energy to run with me, and he was anemic. Cancer can affect multiple organs, producing a lack of energy and that general overall feeling of sickness and malaise. Anorexia or lack of appetite. Anorexia has multiple causes, such as organ dysfunction, dental disease. While a lack of appetite in dogs and cats can be an indicator of many things, they never stop eating without cause. It's not necessarily a sign of cancer. A decrease in appetite can indicate an oral tumor, which may make it painful and difficult for your pet to eat and swallow. They're not eating. We need to investigate the cause of that, and you need to at very least do a thorough exam of your dog or cat, take note of the histories of what's happened in the previous few weeks or few months, and then look at getting a veterinary exam. Difficulty breathing. Most cases of respiratory distress, labored breathing, are due to heart disease producing fluid in the lungs. Your pet will have slow, deep breaths, and you'll see the chest move in and out markedly. Cancer, though, can spread to the lungs, so this can be an important cancer warning sign. Progressive limping or lameness. When I'm thinking of this, I'm thinking of bone cancer or osteosarcoma. It's more common in medium to large dogs, producing a swelling at the end of the long bone, such as the end of the femur, the end of the tibia, or the radius. Intermittent limping, though, is much more typical of arthritis, but progressive painful lameness warrants an exam for bone cancer. The sort of ADR, ain't doing right. I mean, that's sort of the last warning sign, number 7. It's the unusual non-veterinary medical term that applies to pets who just aren't themselves, such as with behavior, eating, energy levels. Your pet may have an unusual smell from their mouth. They may have difficulty eating, a wound that won't heal, a lymph that won't go away, or an unusual swelling under the jaw, as seen in lymph node cancer. You obviously know your dog or cat far better than your veterinarian, so if you see dramatic changes, then usually there's a medical condition to explain it. Ensure that your veterinarian checks for cancer while examining your pet for other diseases that can explain the symptoms. You know, there are numerous different types of cancer, from lymphosarcoma to mast cell tumors to spleen tumors, and there's not one particular sign, but the seven above signs are some of the most important ones I watch for in veterinary practice. If your dog or cat exhibits them, then I advise a thorough veterinary exam and potential additional diagnostic tests check for more serious underlying disease. So let's go into some of the different types of cancer. Lymphoma or lymphosarcoma is cancer of the lymph cells or lymphocytes and lymphoid tissues. Lymphoid tissue is found in the lymph nodes, the spleen, liver, intestinal tract, and bone marrow. The type of lymphoma depends upon where the cancer originates. It may be the skin form, the intestinal form, or generalized and spread throughout the lymph nodes. Also called, that's known as multicentric. Signs for you to watch for include a firm lump that grows and won't go away, and you can actually see the swelling of the lymph nodes. I found it easier with clients to find it just under the corner of their pet's jaw. Some pets will have an increased appetite but continue to lose weight. Others have problems breathing, may show overall weakness, so they are becoming anemic. Mast cell tumor signs for you to watch for include a firm lump that grows and won't go away. Most common mast cell tumors are abnormal skin growths. They're typically red and raised from the skin. They can spread to regional lymph nodes, in some cases to other organs. Mast cell tumors can be present wherever mast cells exist in the body, such as the spleen, liver, and lungs. They're similarly graded with lymphomas, going from grade 1, which is local, slow-growing generally, to grade 5, where the tumor cells have spread throughout the body. Osteosarcoma or bone cancer, which we just talked about earlier, is common in medium to large breeds. Long bones are most commonly affected. Most dogs first intermittently limp, then progressively limp more often as the tumor grows from the inside of the bone out. At that point, you actually may see swelling at the end of the bone, and it can be firm and painful to touch. So what causes cancer? Well, the exact cause of cancer is unknown. No question, environment plays a big role, with exposure to smog, herbicides, insecticides being contributing factors. Vaccines have been implicated, along with food. Preservatives and other chemical additives may also contribute to causing cancer. Clearly, there is also a genetic component. We're seeing increased incidence among certain breeds, and some breeds now have a shorter lifespan due to cancer. So what can you do to prevent your dog or cat from getting cancer in the first place? The issue is complex, and there really isn't just one sort of simple answer. What all experts do agree on is that cancer is caused by many things, or it's multifactorial. What we can do, though, is draw some pretty simple conclusions from large-scale studies on people and equate these to our dogs and cats. There's an increasing evidence pointing towards the array of environmental toxins as the cause of some of the cancers. So avoid pesticides in your pet as much as possible. Avoid using toxic lawn care products. Try to clean your house with non-toxic cleaners. As a society, we're exposed to more cancer-causing products than we're even aware. Think of what's in your pet's bed. Think what's in the lining of your dog's food. Think what's in the lining of the cans of food, the tuna you might be eating. A recent study showed the presence of over 75 environmental carcinogens in a group of so-called healthy people. There are many things you can do to prevent cancer, but this is one big change that's good for both you and your pet. Vaccinate your pets only for what is absolutely necessary. A limited vaccine program is highly recommended, and is especially important if your pet belongs to any of the certain breeds known to be susceptible to cancer and chronic disease. These vaccines continually stimulate your pet's immune system, and in an older animal, this can bring on undesirable effects. And many researchers have wondered, with the increased frequency of vaccines over the past 30 years and the increased incidence of cancer in our pets. The bottom line, just only vaccinate your pets for diseases they are likely to get if not vaccinated, and only give the vaccines boosters as often as needed. As most dogs and cats, these puppies and kittens, yes, vaccinate them as a puppy, vaccinate them as a kitten, have tighter testing at the age of one to see if they even need a booster. In many cases, they may not need any additional vaccines. I'm really big on now of limiting the vaccine, doing the tighter test, deciding if they've got adequate immunity then. And then if you want to check for, you know, levels of protective levels, do it with titers as opposed to vaccines. As with people, regular exercise will help prevent cancer. It helps keep the body weight lower. It can cause a release of stress-relaxing hormones called endorphins. Recent studies in people show that moderate to intense exercise can dramatically reduce the chance of developing cancer. In a Finnish study, the research determined that after controlling for cigarette smoking, fiber and fat intake, age and other variables, the most physically active men were the least likely to develop cancer, particularly of the gastrointestinal tract of the lung. Clearly, the study can be equated to our pets. One simple technique to decreasing the incidence of cancer in our pets is regular exercise, a minimum of 30 minutes twice a day. Nutrition is the most important aspect of cancer prevention in our pets. When the body is supported with the natural building blocks needed to maintain healthy cells and repair damaged ones, healing can begin from within. It's best to feed a premium quality holistic dog and cat food. Avoid artificial colors, artificial flavors. Use a natural preservative. Many of our pets thrive on raw food, and if you take the proper precautions, this is an excellent option. I really encourage you to look at supplementing your dog and your cat's diet with nutrients that may play a role in cancer prevention. In people, the general advice has been to eat a diet including far more fruits and vegetables. Studies have shown that this simple change can reduce the risk of many cancers by as much as 30-50%. In our pets, typically we're not feeding anything fresh, instead hoping that the supposed dry and nutritious pet kibble is going to contain all the nutrients they need. So what are the things I think you should add in then? Omega-3 fatty acids. They should be added to every pet's diet. In fact, they are vital. Omega-3 fatty acids are great anti-inflammatories, and there's been many studies that show they're going to lower the likelihood of some types of cancer. And there's a couple of inexpensive, easy ways to give them. You can do it in the form of flax oil. 1 tablespoon of flax oil per 50 pounds of body weight daily added to their food. For cats, you can do 1 teaspoon of flax oil and or fish oil. The last but not least, I want to discuss their antioxidants. These are substances which protect cells from the damage caused by free radicals. These are the unstable molecules formed during normal cellular interactions. Most scientists tend to agree that free radical damage can lead to cancer. Antioxidants work by stabilizing these free radicals, preventing cell damage and then cancer. There are many, many different antioxidants, such as vitamins A, C, E, selenium, lutein, beta-carotene, lycopene, green tea, curcumin. A very simple way to increase the antioxidants in your pet's diet, antioxidant supplement. I have one, Ultimate Canine Health Formula, Ultimate Feline Health Formula. For something even easier or simpler, you can use ground flaxseed. If you're going to use flaxseed, for instance, for your dog, because it's got not just the EFAs in it, it's also got vitamin E, selenium, ligand, very, very inexpensive. The dose would be 1 tablespoon of ground flax per 50 pounds daily, and you can directly add it to your dog's dry kibble. Cancer itself, it's on the rise for a number of reasons, including environmental toxins, food toxins, genetics, and really many factors we don't even understand. There are certain breeds, such as golden retrievers, are at especially high risk, but there are many things you can do to lower the risk of cancer, avoiding many of the environmental toxins, decreasing the number and frequency of pet vaccines, feeding your pet better, and adding in supplements such as omega-3 fatty acids and antioxidants. So the next part of today's podcast is I wanted to talk a little bit about anxiety in our pets, and why it's really important that you look at helping. If you've got an anxious dog or an anxious cat, for instance, you know, that has signs like separation anxiety, is always barking, has been chewing. In part, it's uncomfortable for you, but in other part, you get the sense that maybe they're not as happy as they could be. But not only that, it's also linked to immune function, and people who are in this constant state of fight versus flight are far more sick more often. So it's not just the obvious reasons, you know, they're anxious. It's also, you want them to not be ill. So I wanted to give you 3 natural options for treating dogs and cats with anxiety. First, let's start with the green tea amino acid, L-theanine. It's that amino acid found in green tea. Studies show that L-theanine produces tranquilizing effects in the brain without drowsiness. It calms by helping to increase a type of brainwave activity, alpha brainwave activity. It's the electrical brain activity commonly present when you're very relaxed. By diminishing feelings of stress, worry, and anxiety, L-theanine may improve mental focus, learning, and concentration. Our pet dose is 50 milligrams per 20 pounds daily, so it'd be 25 milligrams daily for a cat, and it can even be given very frequently every 4 hours during a stressful event. So if, for instance, you know, we're dealing with fireworks or we're having a storm come in, I have it in my house, and my kids use it, my wife uses it, I've used it. my dogs, especially Jesse, who gets anxious at different times when someone new is coming over and he's barking away. He's on L-theanine. It's like sort of my go-to anti-anxiety supplement. I found it to be very effective. I encourage you to consider it. Valerian, it acts on the neuroreceptors in the brain, and it can decrease anxiety in your dog and your cat. The dose is 50 milligrams per pound of the dried herb, or one drop per pound twice daily of the extract. So when I'm particularly giving Valerian, there's a real serious anxious moment going on. Recently, I had to groom Jesse, and he had some Valerian. So I'm looking at the Valerian dose. I'm looking at about a half a mil. If you look at the dropper full of, if you're actually going to get the Valerian tincture, it's the most effective one. So I give Jesse, he's 40 pounds, I give him a half a mil at one time. And I've given him up a mil the last time I attempted to groom him. He ended up getting a whole mil of Valerian, but it's approximately half a mil for 40 pounds, up to a mil for 40 pounds. Acupressure. And it's the last natural anti-anxiety one I think you should be aware of. It's at the base of the nose, between the eyes. You can press that point for 30 to 60 seconds twice a day. So right in between the eyes. You can feel that depression on yourself right between the eyes, right at the base of your nose. Similar located on your dogs and cats. So go ahead and try that. You've got this anxious moment going on. Just try that acupressure point. Use your index finger. You just want to indent the skin. You want to focus yourself. Because we're dealing with Chinese medicine, we're dealing with energy flow. So it's related to what's flowing into you, flowing through your dog or through your cat. And you're hitting that key acupressure point. Think of these 360 points spread throughout your dog and your cat's body, and they have energy flowing through them. So we know when there's some anxiety, when there's anxiety going on, this energy isn't flowing the way it should be. So we're trying to normalize that energy flow. Focus on that. Think about what actually should be happening in your dog or cat. You know, put your index finger right there between their eyes. Just think about only that. 30 to 60 seconds. Do that. See if they appear less anxious after that. If so, repeat that in another hour. You can repeat that in 50 minutes for that matter. There's no sort of particular time period. More the point is you're focused while you're doing it. You're not thinking of anything else. If it's working, great. Just incorporate that in a treatment for anxiety. And as I just said earlier, why do you want to do that? Yes, it makes your pet less anxious. Secondly, too, you can be looking at helping their immune system and having them sick less often. So let's get into the last part of today's podcast. And the question was about a listener's question. My friend says, it's not safe for my dog to lick. What do I think? Good question. And there's been a number of different articles and a few different experts have talked about serious disease. And I commented on not that long ago, you know, a whole magazine article warning on the hazards, all the hazards of having your dog, your cat lick. You know, there's a few experts talked about some serious diseases. They made the assertion that you can avoid, but that these diseases can be avoided by staying away from these wet kisses. One veterinarian talked about all the bacteria in your dog's mouth, but in fact, we people, we have an even greater quantity of disease-causing bacteria should you stop kissing people. Another veterinarian talked about two diseases in particular that can cause diarrhea, Campylobacter and Salmonella. But here's what the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, has to say about Campylobacter. How do people get infected with the germ? It usually occurs in single sporadic cases. It can also occur in outbreak with a number of people become ill at one time. Most cases of Campylobacter are associated with eating raw or undercooked poultry meat or from cross-contamination of other foods by other items. Infants may get the infection by contact with poultry packages and shopping carts. Outbreaks of Campylobacter are usually associated with unpasteurized milk or contaminated water. As you can see, no, it's usually not from dogs or cats. So what about Salmonella? Here's what CDC has to say about Salmonella. Salmonella live in the intestinal tracts of humans and other animals, including birds. Salmonella are usually transmitted to humans by eating foods contaminated with animal feces. Contaminated foods usually look and smell normal. Contaminated foods are often of animal origin, such as beef, poultry, milk, or eggs. But any food, including vegetables, may become contaminated. Thirdly, cooking kills Salmonella. Food may also become contaminated by the hands of an infected food handler who did not wash their hands with soap after using the bathroom. Once again, not from dogs and cats. Can you get very sick by contracting something from your pet? Yeah, you can, but it's very, very, very unlikely. And as stated in the CDC website about these diseases, the primary way that you contract them is through contaminated and undercooked meat, usually poultry, not from being licked by your dog or cat. So what's my point of this little story? Well, should you become a vegetarian? No. One, I want to have you question any story you read. It's really safe to let your dog or cat lick you. I mean, I've yet to see a sick person being licked from their dog or cat. I'm fully convinced the benefits of having your dog or cat kiss you clearly outweigh any risk. Do I get licked frequently from my dog, Lewis? Yes, I do. Do I feel pretty healthy? Yes, I do. Do I think I feel better for it? Yes, I do. Again, 3. So thank you for listening to today's podcast. This is Dr. Andrew Jones. I encourage you, 1, to subscribe to the podcast. Do so on iTunes or Stitcher. Share my podcast if you're finding it helpful. Any questions or comments, comment on the blog, veterinarysecrets.com/blog. Or you can send me an email at podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. Thanks again for listening. This is Dr. Andrew Jones, and I'll talk to you again next week.